How can you make a difference on this crazy planet? Listen to nature-inspired stories and interviews with environmental educators for some new ideas. Sustainable Living News writer, nature walker, and youth educator Wendy Natterney-Fashon hosts the Story Walking Radio Hour to talk about issues that matter and to introduce you to people who are coming up with creative, sensible solutions. Let's engage with Earth, with spirit, and with one another, heart to heart, to solve problems and co-create more meaningful life stories. Tune in to Nature's Loving Vibes every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome to the Story Walking Radio Hour, a creative environmental educational experience. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney-Fashon, here on the syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, which is the media partner for Omega Institute. For a full schedule of Dream Vision 7 radio programming, go to dreamvision7radio.com. You'll find this show listed under the Sustainable Living tab, or you can access it through my website at storywalking.com. For additional environmental education, inspiration, and resources, look up Green Teacher, a Canada-based global network whose mission is to enhance environmental literacy among young learners by equipping environmental educators in all educational contexts with innovative, inclusive, relevant, and evidence-based resources. The organization's quarterly Green Teacher magazine offers perspectives on the role of education in creating a sustainable future. Each issue is filled with practical articles, ready-to-use activities, and reviews of new educational resources. To see what it's all about and subscribe, go to www.greenteacher.com. Each month, the Story Walking Radio Hour investigates a different environmental issue, often looking directly to nature for simple, practical solutions. In this episode, we will focus on wild mushrooms, mycology, foraging, cooking, and even remediation. We'll be talking a lot about the mushroom's mysterious and miraculous mycelium, which is the lesser-known part of the mushroom. Mycelium, for those of you who don't know, is the hidden mass of branching thread-like hyphae that produce the visible fruiting bodies we call mushrooms. Few people realize the critical role mycelium play in maintaining a healthy forest ecosystem. As I've become more aware of mushrooms, I've become enchanted, and I've been wanting to learn more about mycology, which is the study of fungi. So here we are, about to embark on another fascinating learning journey. Get ready to cover a lot of ground today, literally and figuratively, because today's guests, Ryan Bouchard and Emily Schmidt, are the co-founders of the Mushroom Hunting Foundation. They educate people about safely hunting for wild mushrooms and teach fungal biology and ecology. Most people tend to avoid mushrooms because, well, as children, they heard the words, "Don't touch those mushrooms, they're poison." Ryan explains his cultural bias has been passed down through our country's primarily English ancestry. Yes, we do need to be cautious in identifying mushrooms that are safe to eat or unsafe to eat. However, we don't need to avoid mushrooms altogether, because otherwise we'll fail to learn the important benefits that mushrooms and other fungi provide us. Ryan is the author of Gourmet Mushrooms of the Northeast, a combination book and calendar. His exquisite photography and clearly written text detail the annual progression of mushroom seasons. Edible mushrooms can be found year-round with different species fruiting different seasons, including the winter months. While it requires expertise to know which mushrooms are poisonous, which ones are safe, which ones are palatable, and when they are most palatable, Ryan focuses on species that are easiest for novices to identify. Both Ryan and Emily are experts in identification and preparing mushroom recipes. Emily will help us delve into the health, nutrition, and technological uses of fungi, which includes growing mushrooms to decontaminate polluted soil, a process called mycoremediation. I get that one out. Before we meet our guests, however, I'm going to take you on a virtual hunt for mushrooms, a story walk. One October morning in Maine, my daughter and my niece challenged me to go on a mushroom hunt and photograph as many species as I could find. So, stepping onto a woodland trail, I set out on a mushroom scavenger hunt. The first mushroom caps I noticed were fairly unremarkable, buff, tan, or brown caps that blended in with the leaf litter on the forest floor. One uprooted white cap, shaped like an inverted umbrella, displayed white gills, radiating outward on the underside of the cap like the fine spokes of a wagon wheel. Wondering if the other mushrooms had gills underneath, I uprooted a thick, buff-colored cap to discover a spongy underside of a vivid yellow color instead of gills. I found a round white mushroom that reminded me of a golf ball. It was textured with teeny tiny spikes and had no gills or spongy undersides. Rather, the cap connected directly to a fat stem like a head on a neck. I found a red mushroom cap with white polka dots, and I spied a variety of orange mushrooms. There was a brilliant orange cluster of flat caps with indented centers growing from the base of a tree stump. And there was one single, tiny, shiny, round-topped pumpkin orange cap with a ghostly white glow around the cap's edges. And it was sitting atop a smooth white stem. There was one single large cap with a flat color and texture of orange brick growing atop a brown textured stem. The differences were often subtle yet distinct. A flat bright yellow cap with pale yellow warts and a ridged border sat atop a long thin white collared stem, while a round bright orange cap with lemon chiffon colored warts and a smooth rounded edge sat atop a thick short stem. You get the idea. But then the most stunning mushroom was violet and shaped like a flying saucer. Pale spots stretched and diffused out from the center like an exploding galaxy. Well, expecting to find maybe 10 different kinds of mushrooms during my walk, I was surprised to return with over 40 unique photographs. Of course, I had no idea what the mushrooms were named, nor whether they were poisonous or not. What I did realize, however, was that I was in awe of all I had seen and eager to learn more. I eventually texted a photo of the stunning violet mushroom to Ryan Bouchard, and he texted back, "Ah, Cortinarius iotus, the viscid violet Cortinarius. When it is young, the cap is viscid, viscid meaning tacky, gluey, or gooey. When fully grown, it develops those spots on the cap. The way it looks like stars, some call it the cosmic Cortinarius. Edibility for this species is not solidly established." Wow. Thank you, Ryan. Okay, so here we go. Cosmic Cortinarius. Man, maybe its spores will scatter to spawn more galaxies. Nature never ceases to amaze me with its mystery, creativity, beauty, and diversity. Upon returning home from Maine, I hunted around our yard for mushrooms and found six clusters growing around the base of an old oak tree. The clusters were grayish-brown with flat overlapping petals that curled back toward their stems. The undersides were smooth and white with minute pores. I guess they might be hen of the woods, only because my daughter, with the help of Aunt Susie, had recently identified this edible species growing near her house and had texted me some photos. Each cluster of hen in the woods looks a bit like a fluffed up hen. I did some online research to learn more. This mushroom, hen of the woods, is also known by the name of mitake. Mitake means dancing mushroom in Japanese. Its form also resembles the waving hands and kimono sleeves of dancing girls and is native to Northeast Japan, as well as to North America. I took some photographs of the clusters around our tree and sent them to Aunt Susie for verification. She confirmed, yes, those are hen of the woods, and sent me some photographs and pages of text from one of her books. Our guest Ryan writes in his book that hen of the woods is, without question, one of the world's best edible species, yet it also happens to be an easy species, one that can be identified correctly by a beginner who understands the basic rules of mushroom hunting. While maitake can be cultivated any time of year, October is the month to find wild maitake in New England. Excitedly, I harvested 4 clusters, cutting them away with a paring knife at ground level. My harvest of maitake weighed about 5 pounds altogether. I brought the mushrooms into the kitchen and cleaned them carefully, pulling the petals apart and brushing off the dirt. I had to use water to rinse off some of the dirt and laid the damp pieces on paper towel to dry. I set aside 3 portions for my husband to vacuum seal in plastic for freezer storage. I placed a 4th portion in a brown paper bag to store in the refrigerator, and I prepared to saute the final portion in butter with minced garlic, salt, and pepper for dinner. Now, wanting to learn more about mushrooms, I visited the Chelsea Green publishing website, chanced upon a 50% discount opportunity, and ordered a book called Organic Mushroom Farming and Micro-Remediation by Trad Cotter. There are 3 ways of obtaining edible mushrooms. 1, hunting for them in the wild. 2, buying them at a grocery store, although those are probably cultivated and not wild. Or number 3, farming them, which means producing them on a substrate to provide a habitat and food source for growth. Substrates include tree stumps, logs, wood chips, sawdust, straw, or other forms of dry plant debris. Cultivation also requires spawn, which is a form of mushroom mycelium that is ready to plant into the substrate medium. Cotter goes into great detail explaining the science of mushroom farming and micro-remediation, which are both highly experimental processes. Cotter defines micro-remediation as the use of fungi, specifically mushrooms, for creating simple yet effective biomass capable of breaking down environmental and industrial pollutants. Mycelium acts as a self-healing filter and is capable of neutralizing soils contaminated with specific pollutants, including PCB chemicals, hydrocarbons, pesticides, heavy metals, bacterial pathogens, even plastics. What fascinates me is the idea that the mycelium hyphae secrete enzymes into the soil, wood, or other substrate in order to break down substrate structure. Large molecules are broken down into smaller molecules, which are absorbed into the mycelium for nourishment. Each species of mycelium has specific enzymes, qualities, and capabilities. The mycelium of maitake, for example, has a combination of strength and elasticity that makes it useful for the microfiltration of water. The mycelium of oyster mushrooms has the ability to break down pesticides. Mushrooms offer great potential for practical research that can be applied to mitigating pollution and recycling toxic compounds into regenerative material. My favorite chapter in Cotter's book is Fungi in the Classroom. The chapter outlines progressive program tracks on fungal ecology, cultivation, recycling, composting, and micro-remediation for all grade levels, elementary, middle school, high school, and college. For ages 5 to 10, he suggests mushroom collecting, mushroom art, spore prints, life cycle instruction, inoculating coffee grounds or cardboard to cultivate oyster mushrooms, and mushroom paper making. Higher grade level research and science projects build upon the elementary learning. I'll provide a link to Cotter's book on the podcast page for people interested in learning more about micro-remediation. There are many good books covering different aspects of mycology. In fact, last week, while visiting Aunt Susie in Ohio, she gave me an early Christmas present. Three new books covering wild mushroom foraging, safe identification of wild mushrooms, and cooking with wild mushrooms. Lucky me! Later in today's show, Ryan will be talking about his book, Gourmet Mushrooms of the Northeast, which, as I mentioned earlier, is loaded with fine photography and valuable information. I love books, I love to learn, and I love to share. What I love about creating the Story Walking Radio Hour is that each month I get to research a new topic, converse with experts, hear their stories, discover new interests for myself, and share my own story walking journey. If you have a suggestion for a sustainability or environmental topic, perhaps something you already know a lot about, or something you're curious to know, my email is storywalkerwendy@gmail.com. My phone is 401-529-6830. I'm open to suggestions that align with sustainability and environmental education, and am always on the lookout for inspiring new guests. The purpose and mission of the Story Walking Radio Hour is to open minds and foster positive difference-making here on planet Earth. As we gain a better understanding of the various environmental problems, we can develop and share sensible solutions and start taking collective action. You, dear listener, can make a difference simply by sharing favorite Story Walking episodes. Story Walking podcasts reside on the Story Walking Radio Hour archives page at dreamvision7radio.com under the Sustainable Living Show listings. Anyone can download the podcasts and listen to them through an iPhone or a computer. Forward episodes to family and friends, and please, please share this episode with friends, family, and school leaders so they can learn about the ecological, culinary, and health benefits of mushrooms. It's time for our first station break. You're listening to the Story Walking Radio Hour here on the syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. Visit the storywalking.com website to learn more. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney-Fashon, and I'll be returning in a moment to introduce our guests, Ryan Bouchard and Emily Smith, co-founders of the Mushroom Hunting Foundation. Please stay tuned.
Can you make a difference on this crazy planet? Listen to nature-inspired stories and interviews with environmental educators for some new ideas. Sustainable Living News writer, nature walker, and youth educator Wendy Natterney-Fashon hosts the Story Walking Radio Hour to talk about issues that matter and to introduce you to people who are coming up with creative, sensible solutions. Let's engage with Earth, with spirit, and with one another. Heart to heart to solve problems and co-create more meaningful life stories. Tune in to Nature's Loving Vibes every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. here on the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
How can parents help their teenage children navigate the challenging years between childhood and adulthood? How might parents continue to gently exert a positive influence during this critical stage of growth and development? Read The Difference Maker, written by parent and Story Walking radio host Wendy Natterney-Fashon. This book shares the story of her late son Neil, their relationship, and the wisdom of an enlightened teenager. The Difference Maker is a coming-of-age collection of stories that parents can share and discuss with their kids. Go to the storywalking.com website, download The Difference Maker, and become inspired.
Why would God design a heart-shaped flower that cries? In a picture book titled The Angel Heart, a curious child picks such a flower and carefully pulls it apart, one poetic petal at a time, to reveal the answer. Discover the miracle of the heart and its role in providing comfort, joy, and peace. Written in the language of love, this uplifting story is sure to open up conversations about emotions, spiritual beliefs, the circle of life, or even fairy magic. Give your favorite child the gift of love. The Angel Heart by Wendy Natterney Fashan. Available through Amazon and Balboa Press.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back to the Story Walking Radio Hour here on the syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney Fashan, and we're talking about the wild world of mushrooms with our guests, Ryan Bouchard and Emily Schmidt, co-founders of the Mushroom Hunting Foundation. Welcome, Ryan and Emily. Thank you for joining us today.
Okay. Hello, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's start with your personal story. Like, how did you come to discover a fascination with mushrooms? Shall we start with you, Emily?
Sure. Well, Ryan and I both got into mushrooms together. We both loved hiking and we loved nature. And we saw a class advertised through the Audubon Society with wild mushroom hunting. So we decided to take that class and we learned a little bit, mostly what to avoid. So we got some books on the subject and started becoming just completely obsessed with it. Once we tried the flavors of the chicken of the woods, that was the first wild mushroom we had sampled, we were completely hook, line, and sinker addicted to wild mushroom hunting. And we thought, we can't find these in stores. We can't even buy them online. How do we find these mushrooms? We have to learn to find them ourselves. So that's how it all started about 12 years ago.
Okay.
We also had the advantage of going to some lectures by our favorite mushroom authors, particularly Gary Linkoff and David Aurora. We got to meet them in person and hunt with them, which was wonderful while Gary was still alive.
Nice. Okay. So Ryan, how did your joint passion lead to creating the Mushroom Hunting Foundation? And can you explain the mission of your organization?
All right. Well, yeah, we found ourselves really, as Emily said, hook, line, and sinker, really into mushroom hunting. It was so much fun. It sort of incorporated so many of our interests and skills, actually. I had always been interested in, like, species and identification in nature. Emily and I both love nature, and I, in particular, had this history of kind of studying moths. What kind of moth is that in this photograph? You know, kind of identifying different species. And so we found Emily and I were both good at identifying mushrooms. We were good at photographing mushrooms. We were good at cooking mushrooms. I mean, both of us brought different things to the table here, but we got good at it. And suddenly we realized, geez, you know, other people should be able to enjoy this. It's like some of this adventuring looking for mushrooms was easily the most fun we had ever had, in some ways. And, I think we suddenly at some point realized, actually, you know, what happened was my mom was looking at the photos I had taken of mushrooms and said, these are beautiful. You know, you should make a mushroom calendar. And at first I thought, I don't want to make a mushroom calendar. That's just 12 pictures. But then I thought, geez, you know, what if I combined the mushroom calendar idea with months, different months of the year where you can find different mushrooms, and also goes on to include more information than just the 12 pages of the calendar. In fact, what if I attach an entire book to the back of the calendar so that people really get a book about how to do mushroom hunting safely. So I was experimenting with this idea, and we started, you know, self-publishing these sort of mushroom books / calendars. And Emily and I began to teach classes about a lot of strange different venues we would find, sort of health food stores or kind of outdoors type of shops or, you know, nature centers or libraries. And we started to teach people about mushroom hunting. And at some point, I mean, over the years, it grew and grew, and we taught more and more people, more and more different classes during the year, and public classes where people could sign up for it, private classes where people would kind of plan a class with us for a small group. And, you know, some of these classes were different. Some of them were indoor slideshow classes. Some of them were outdoor guided walk mushroom classes. And some of them included cooking demonstrations. And so we came up with sort of a deluxe class that would include all of that, sort of starting in your own living room, the slideshow class, and going out mushroom hunting, and then coming back for an amazing cooking finale. So we started developing these different types of classes, and we were called we're calling ourselves Southern New England Mushroom Hunting for quite a while. And at some point we realized our educational endeavor was sort of the perfect fit for a nonprofit organization. So we created a 501c3 and called it the Mushroom Hunting Foundation. And we just continued to do what we were already doing, but hopefully on a wider and wider scale, to reach a wider and wider audience throughout this region and perhaps others as well. And we've now taught thousands of people about wild mushroom hunting, and our whole mission is to teach people how to do it safely, and that it is safe and easy to do if you know what you're doing. And we sort of we developed a system of difficulty levels for the different mushrooms. As you mentioned, my book focuses on the ones that are easy, safe for beginners. They don't resemble anything poisonous. So we carefully selected those, which ones, you know, nobody's going to make a deadly mistake with. Now, there are other mushrooms that are edible, but you could easily mistake it for something deadly. So we consider those expert level, you know, experts only, not for beginners. So there's certain categories of mushrooms that you avoid cooking and eating as a beginner, although you should not avoid collecting them and studying them. That's very helpful. You just have to be absolutely sure if you're going to eat something, you have to know exactly what species it is.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah. Definitely. Okay. So I just really want to, actually, we're going to take a break right now, all right, and we'll come back because there's a lot to talk about here. You know, I think we want to talk a little bit about the culinary, nutritional, medicinal aspects, but then we also want to talk about some of the adventuring and, you know, as a family, what a great family activity is. So there's a lot to cover. So we're going to take a break right here, and we're going to come back shortly. Listeners, thank you for joining us here on the Storywalking Radio Hour. Help us grow our community of listeners and difference makers so we can work together to build a better world. All the Storywalking podcasts are free online. Go to the storywalking.com website to learn more. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney-Fashon, and we're talking about mushrooms with Ryan Bouchard and Emily Schmidt, co-founders of the Mushroom Hunting Foundation. Our conversation will continue after this station break.
Why would God design a heart-shaped flower that cries? In a picture book titled The Angel Heart, a curious child picks such a flower and carefully pulls it apart, one poetic petal at a time, to reveal the answer. Discover the miracle of the heart and its role in providing comfort, joy, and peace. Written in the language of love, this uplifting story is sure to open up conversations about emotions, spiritual beliefs, the circle of life, or even fairy magic.
give your favorite child the gift of love. The Angel Heart by Wendy Natterney-Fashon. Available through Amazon and Balboa Press. How can you make a difference on this crazy planet? Listen to nature-inspired stories and interviews with environmental educators for some new ideas. Sustainable Living News writer, nature walker, and youth educator Wendy Natterney-Fashon hosts the Story Walking Radio Hour to talk about issues that matter and to introduce you to people who are coming up with creative, sensible solutions. Let's engage with Earth, with spirit, and with one another. Heart to heart to solve problems and co-create more meaningful life stories. Tune in to Nature's Loving Vibes every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Delight your kids with an enchanting journey by reading the Paper Doll Kids children's book by Deborah Beauvais and Janine Sullivan. There's even a catchy tune, Kids for Love Song, produced by Bob Sherwood and sung by kids just like yours. The story weaves around seven paper dolls flying around the world doing good deeds as they bring important attention to our endangered animal friends. There's even a magical ring with a universal message. Kids become interested in service projects, action through compassion, and planting seeds that nurture positive change. The Paper Doll Kids and Kids for Love Song are a production of the Kids for Love Project. Get the book now on Amazon Kindle and the song on CD Baby or iTunes.
High school student Neil Fashon dreamed of leading other young people away from hopelessness to helpfulness, from loneliness to friendship, and from inertia to difference making. Then, in college, he was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. After Neil died at age 20, his mother, Wendy, began to sort through the memorabilia he'd accumulated over the years. Artwork, notebooks, journals, personal notes, and letters. She's assembled these memories into a timely ebook called The Difference Maker. Parents and teens will appreciate this collection of stories about kindness, resilience, faith, and love. Go to thestorywalking.com website, download The Difference Maker, and become inspired.
Edicia is a U.S. nonprofit dedicated to the dream of ending childhood malnutrition for millions of children around the world. Through the manufacture of Plumpy Nut and other nutrient-rich peanut-based ready-to-use foods, Edicia has already delivered life and hope to nearly 1 million children in over 26 developing countries. To find out how you can join Edicia's dream of ending childhood malnutrition, please visit ediciaglobal.org.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Okay, we're back with the Story Walking Radio Hour here on the syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney-Fashon, and we're talking with our guests, Ryan Bouchard and Emily Schmidt, co-founders of the Mushroom Hunting Foundation, and we're talking about wild mushrooms. So let's jump back in. Before we get to the hunting, mushroom hunting and culinary aspect, I just was really curious, Ryan, in speaking with you earlier, before the show, I learned that mushrooms can support a healthy ecosystem through different biological functions. And you categorize some fungi as saprobic, meaning they're decomposers, and you categorize others as mycorrhizal, meaning they support plant life through symbiosis. There's a lot of deep science involved here, but I'm wondering if you could just real briefly explain these actions in fairly simple terms, because I think it somewhat does relate to your going hunting, right?
Absolutely. To know the fungus itself, the fungus that produces mushrooms, the mycelium, is incredibly helpful for finding and identifying different kinds of mushrooms. But as you said, it sounds very Well, it is very small and sort of a lot of microscopic things that are going on, and it can be confusing to hear about it. But so, yeah, to explain it in simple terms, yeah, and I think this is really helpful for people because we tend to not really know how mushrooms operate in this country, and it's not as hard as, it's not as mysterious as people think. So there's different mycelia, and a mycelium is a network of little fuzzy fibers called hyphae, these fine white little fibers. So it's this white fuzzy fungus material, and you generally don't see it. It's inside rotting wood or piles of rotting leaves. Sometimes it's spreading throughout the soil. And it generally just looks like white fuzz, and you don't see it. And even if you do, you don't know what kind of mushroom that's going to produce. It's just some mysterious mycelium species. You wouldn't be able to identify it unless it produced its fruit, which is mushrooms. So the mushrooms are the fruit of the mycelium, which is good news for mushroom hunters because it means it is sustainable to pick them. It's very much like picking the berries off of a bush. The berries are going to grow back. So that's why mushroom hunters sort of guard their secret spots, locations where they know mushrooms are going to reappear. So people don't generally tell everybody where they found their best mushrooms because they want to check the spot again next year or next week, if as the case may be. So these different mycelia are out there. And as you mentioned, some of them are decomposers that break down dead wood and other organic material, and some of them are mycorrhizal, meaning they have a symbiotic relationship with living plants and trees. And specifically, it's the ones that associate with trees that tend to produce some nice mushrooms for us. And so these mycelia, the mycorrhizal ones, they have a positive relationship with trees. The tree provides them, well, let me explain how they're connected. This fuzzy white mycelium sort of interlaces with the fine little rootlets of the tree, and not the big roots, but the little rootlet hairs at the ends of the roots. They sort of link up and intertwine, and they start to exchange things. The mycelium brings water and minerals to the tree. So essentially, the mycelium can actually extend the reach of the tree's roots to get water from further away, and it provides minerals as well. And in exchange, the mycelium gets sugar from the tree that the tree has produced through photosynthesis. So they're helping each other, and they have co-evolved. Certain species have co-evolved to work together. Certain kinds of mycelium will partner up with certain living trees, and it can throw off more destructive fungi or other sort of invaders that could harm the tree. And in fact, an arborist can help a sick tree by inoculating it with the right kinds of fungi. It'll form this mycorrhizal partnership with the tree and help it to thrive. So a healthy forest includes a lot of these mycorrhizal fungi feeding the trees water and minerals and partnering up with the living trees, and also a lot of saprobic fungi that break down all the dead wood branches, and eventually when an entire tree dies, they break that down too. And that's why the trees aren't all stacked up to the sky with millions of years worth of dead trees. They've all been broken down by this kind of quiet background process of decomposition by the decomposer mushrooms, the saprobic mycelia. So yeah, the mycelia are out there all the time. They're dormant through the winter mostly, but they are always there. They don't die in the winter, and then next year they start to thrive again. So any forest will have loads of different mycelia in and around the trees.
Okay, great. Thank you. So there's sort of the scientific side of this. Now I wanted to jump into the culinary, nutritional, medicinal side of it. So Emily, I'm going to sort of shift over to you to tell us a little bit about this.
Sure. Well, for a long time, mushrooms were thought to be devoid of any nutritional properties, but that's been proven to be very false. They can be a source of different things like vitamins and minerals, especially copper and vitamin D, good source of vitamin D. But they also have antioxidants. Surprisingly, some contain amino acids and protein, and they're really good for the immune system. Medicinal mushrooms can run all different kinds of functions. They can be anti-tumor and anti-cancer, being studied for fighting cancers and stimulating the immune system naturally. There's also mushrooms that have been shown to help people control their cholesterol or even their blood sugar with diabetes. So mushrooms have a lot of value, and in the kitchen, they're indispensable. They're a great substitute for meat, or they can be used to combine with meat to make a juicier burger, and they can be a good for vegans and vegetarians as meat substitution.
Yeah, they're high in protein. I do know that. And I guess it's one of the few foods that provides vitamin D, particularly.
If you dry the mushrooms in sunlight, it can concentrate the vitamin D even more after they're picked.
So it's a great food to have, particularly in the winter when you are lacking vitamin D. If you can have
mushrooms, that's when your dried mushrooms come in handy. But you want to be careful not to harvest your mushrooms from polluted areas because they can absorb different toxins and heavy metals, and they can remediate some soils and not be present in the fruiting body. But then there are other things, other compounds that aren't like radiation that stays within a mushroom. Mushrooms can even, micromediate things like from radiation and nuclear disasters. But those mushrooms shouldn't be eaten.
Right, no. Of course. When the mycelium is deliberately being used to clean up pollution, you don't want to eat those mushrooms. And as Emily said, in the wild or looking for wild mushrooms, you want to avoid certain areas that seem likely to be polluted. For example, a lot of people send us a picture from the side of their golf course. Look at this thing I just found while I'm golfing. I looked you guys up online. Can you tell me what this is? And we say, well, yeah, I'll tell you what that is. It's a delicious hen of the woods, and you should not eat it because it's next to a golf course, and it's loaded with who knows what kinds of chemicals that are used to keep that grass just so perfect. And the same thing with perfect lawns. You got to wonder, it's not natural. And then there's like different other areas you should avoid, like next to an old factory, or just kind of use common sense, stick to clean areas, and get some nice clean fresh delicious mushrooms. And as Emily was saying, there's so many different varieties that generally people don't know about. For us, all of these things we've eaten over 250 species of mushrooms at this point. But every one of them was like an amazing new discovery when we learned about it and
different
eventually
flavors.
Found it and cooked it and ate it. I mean, all the different shapes and colors and textures.
And the flavors. They're so varied. Yeah. They can be savory. They can be sweet. They can be sour, they can be bitter, but sometimes in a pleasant way. Spicy or just complex, earthy flavors. The flavors are really diverse. So like a lot of people think mushrooms taste like mushrooms, but that's because all the mushrooms in the supermarket that you can buy, almost all of them are the same species. The white button mushroom, the brown button mushrooms or criminis, the baby bellas and portobello mushrooms are all the same species of mushroom. So when people go trying to find something different, they often coming home with the same thing without realizing it.
You got to get out of the woods.
I read that the other day in your calendar book, and I never knew that before. I was like, wow, huh. So anyway, circling back to this whole activity of hunting for wild mushrooms, it seems like a great activity, I mean, really fun for families. What's your experience in leading friends and family on hunting expeditions? I'll bet you have some pretty good stories. Ryan, you want to start on that one, and then we'll jump over to Emily?
For sure, yeah. We have had a lot of great classes and experiences with teaching families. Yeah, sometimes it's a group of adult friends or family, and sometimes it's a whole family with kids. And in Europe, where mushroom hunting is a little more prevalent, they don't hesitate to send the kids out looking for mushrooms. Remember, it's safe to touch any kind of mushroom. But of course, the rule is you bring them back and you don't eat anything unless your parents have checked it out and identified it and cooked it. So it is safe to do with kids. You have to watch out with dogs. If you start taking an interest in mushrooms, you may find your dog starts to take an interest in the mushrooms too. You got to be really careful about that. Don't let your dog eat any mushrooms. Be careful even inside if you've got mushrooms on the table for study and you don't know what they are. You know, don't let the dog get them. Aside from that, it's completely safe to do. And one of the things we've found is that it's a lot of fun for the entire family, even when not everybody in the family thinks it's going to be fun. I remember there was this one group where there was this one kid who was really interested in mushrooms. In fact, it was almost, I think it was him that got his parents to do the class. And there was his brother who was really into sports and not that much into the science stuff that his brother was doing and kind of looked bored at first, but then definitely seemed to take an interest during our slideshow just because of the crazy mushroom species in the pictures and stuff. And as we talked about how you can cook some of them, he started taking more of an interest. But what that kid found in particular was a lot of fun was we got to a point where there were these oyster mushrooms up in a tree, and his brother was like, oh, they're too high up, and this kind of more athletic guy was like, I can get them, you know. And so, you know, of course, they had to make sure he didn't get hurt or anything, but that was really fun. And, you know, as you mentioned, you know, there's art things you can do with kids as well. There's a mushroom called the artist's conch, C-O-N-K. And conchs are mushrooms that are kind of stiff and durable, and kind of a lot of them are shaped like a clamshell, and you can find them on trees sometimes long after they've died. And so there's this one called the artist's conch that you can etch things on, and that's really neat. And there's a lot of cool things you can do with mushrooms with kids. That you can make spore prints, a lot of kind of artistic and fun things, scientific-based things you can do. And, of course, there's the actual identification, which is really, you know, a kind of nature, species identification type of activity. And it's really fun. It's got to be more fun than anything.
Because I don't want us to get to the end of the show and not mention chaga. Emily, maybe you can tell us a little about chaga.
Chaga is really amazing. It's actually not a mushroom. It's the mycelium, or a bundle of mycelium called sclerotium, that is collected. And they can be massive. They can grow. We've seen pictures online, you know, from Siberia where they're just like growing like the size of basically like a small car. But I don't know if they're photoshopped or not. But they're really amazing. You can find them in the dead of winter. Traditionally, they're collected in the wintertime because once the leaves fall from the trees, they're easier to spot on the white birches. And they can grow on any type of birch, but they're most commonly associated with birch trees. And they can grow on other types of hardwoods, although we've never seen it. It can happen, but they're not considered medicinal if they grow on a different type of tree. And that's because something about the betulinic acid is absorbed by the mycelium, and it has a synergistic effect on the compounds within the chaga. Chaga is a great anti-inflammatory, and it's also being studied for fighting cancers. I guess it's particularly good for skin cancers, it's just another natural medicine out there that's gaining in popularity. And for that reason, some people say it's becoming over-harvested. Ryan and I's experience, we don't see that. We leave a lot of chagas that we find, and when we go back to the different areas, they're usually still there. But that doesn't mean it's not becoming more popular and that people, do harvest it.
It doesn't look
grows a little more slowly than the types of mushrooms because it's not actually a mushroom that you're collecting.
Yeah, it doesn't look particularly appetizing, so I'm just curious.
It is really good, though. It's usually used as just a medicine, but the flavor of the tea is pretty spectacular.
Because it's a black mushroom, right? Or not mushroom,
that's right.
I mean a black fungus?
That's right. Yeah. To confirm its identity, you want to break it in half and see what the interior of it looks like, because the outside of it is black as night or black like charcoal, but the inside of it is like a golden amber or burnt orange sort of color.
Yeah, and speckled appearance. And you know, you want to compare it to photographs. You know, don't just go by what we're saying on the air here. But
yeah, there is a poisonous lookalike for chaga called black cherry knot, which is a poisonous one you have to look out for. It does look quite a bit like chaga when it grows on the trunk of the tree, but it usually grows on twigs and branches.
But it's easy to identify that once you know how to compare the photos. But, you know, it's funny that one Emily mentioned, the black cherry knot. Someone handed us their business card, and they were talking about, you know, they make chaga products, and the picture on their business card was a picture of a big black cherry knot, and we were like, "Oh my God! You know, we gotta warn this person that they just don't know what they're doing."
So
the chaga is pretty easy to identify, but you're gonna want to look at some pictures of it. It's a ton of fun to deal with chaga. You never would have thought that you might want to carry an axe with you for mushroom hunting, but the chaga sometimes. And we found a way to avoid using an axe by kind of just finding a blunt log from nearby and kind of just smacking at the chaga with the log and breaking it off the tree. And
yeah. And Ryan has done this with chagas that have been maybe 20-30 feet up.
Yeah, if you find the right long stick, you can kind of use it like a big pool cue and take a chaga down from it. But we've heard that in Russia, people will use a shotgun to bring a chaga down from a tree.
Oh, my gosh.
Another method there.
Yeah. Okay. We're kind of coming to the end here. And I guess, you know, where can people find out more about the foundation, and how can they order copies of your book? And, you know, we have a few minutes to, or one more minute to sort of put that out there.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah, thank you for the opportunity, because that's our whole mission, is to teach more people how to safely enjoy America's amazing wild mushrooms.
And you can find us online on our website, mushroomhunting.org.
And if you go to that website, the shop has my calendar book for sale in there, and it is a 2019 calendar that's in there, but remember what I was explaining, it's really a 50-page oversized book that's specifically designed to be the best introduction to safe mushroom hunting. So
well,
I wouldn't steer you wrong, I wouldn't try to sell you an expired calendar.
Even though it's 2019, it takes you through a whole year, and it definitely shows you, you know, what you can do each month and so forth. So it's I love it. It's fantastic, and the information in the back of it is really cool. I mean, I've learned a lot by reading it. So
thank you very much, Wendy. I also wanted to just throw it out there that our email address is info@mushroomhunting.org.
And we will put all that on the podcast page so people can find that. Okay, time to wrap up now. Thank you. It's, you know, time to conclude
this episode, Wendy.
Yeah, thank you both, Ryan and Emily, for sharing your stories and teaching us all about wild mushrooms. Listeners, you can learn more and connect with Ryan and Emily through their website, at www.mushroomhunting.org. So I want to make sure I mention that again. Please share this episode and podcast with friends and family and help us spread the word about wild mushrooms, foraging, cooking, mycology, and remediation. There's so much there to learn about. The Story Rocking Radio airs on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you for listening today. Hope you join us in the future. You can listen anytime online or on your mobile device. For a full schedule of Dream Vision 7 Radio programming, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio is the media partner for Omega Institute. Thank you for joining us here today on the Storywalking Radio Hour. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney-Fashon, with Ryan Bouchard and Emily Schmidt, wishing you a wonderful day filled with the tremendous abundance that nature and life itself have to offer. So thank you very much.
Once again, the Storywalking Radio Hour has covered a lot of ground. Please join Wendy Natterney-Fashon next time for a new edition of the Storywalking Radio Hour. This show airs every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Listen live on DreamVision7Radio.com, where you can also access archives of previous Storywalking Radio Hour episodes. Find them under the Sustainable Living section and visit the Storywalking.com website, where you can contact Wendy to learn more about the practice of storywalking.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.